Abani Ghani, everyone. This is Professor Amin-Ra, Professor Emeritus, California State University of Long Beach, former city councilman for the city of Compton, former Compton College Board of Trustees and Compton Unified School District Board of Trustees, founder of the Black World Institute, a video and audio library of historical events and presentations by lecturers and freedom fighters for us in, during the 60s and 70s, a collection of their lectures and things of that nature. I want to welcome you to the Conscious Corner and welcome you found your family in a peaceful place. We wish all of you blessings without numbers and all good things without end. On our panel tonight, we have Brother Ashi from Detroit, longtime activist and knowledgeable person of the history and cultural dynamics of African people. We have Brother Mashinda from Louisiana, deep in the South, giving us that Southern hospitality as well as Southern consciousness of what's going on in the South. We deeply appreciate both of these brothers, along with historian and archivist for the McBride, Ernest McBride Sr. Legacy, his son, Ernest McBride, a historian with regard to his memory and oral history and living history that he was a part of in Long Beach, along with his father and relatives, that really shaped Long Beach and got the first Black city councilman elected and just got the people active in pursuing dignity and a sense of pride in their community. And that's why they named centers and schools after his father. And again, we got Brother Rashiki Maskani, longtime activist out of California State University of Long Beach, where he graduated, a longtime teacher for the Centennial, for the Compton Unified School District Board of Trustees, where he still worked, and just a great brother that provided us both the Conscious Corner and Zoom cast, as well as the Community Education Zoom cast. And we deeply appreciate his effort for providing us this platform. We're going to get into some subject matters today. This is Black August, a continuation of the discussion, but we're going to focus now on the Watts Rebellion that was a part of the Black August celebration and appreciation of the struggles and the contributions and the challenges that it poses at that time. Some of us may not even been born and couldn't participate in 1965, or they were too young, but I'm pretty sure me and Ernest was there. So I'm going to start with Brother Ernest. Ernest, what do you remember about the Watts Rebellion? And, you know, they tried to call it a riot, but I'm going to tell you why it's a rebellion. But go ahead, Ernest.
Well, the thing I remember most of all, like I was telling Rashaqid earlier, at that time I gotten out of the Army. I did 2 years active duty, 61, 62. And then when I got out, they, you know, we didn't have a reserve unit with my MO, my military occupational specialty, which was a radar repairman. So they didn't have nothing in Long Beach. And the closest one they had was up in Van Nuys. So what happened, and the guy said, don't worry about going to meeting because you don't need to be driving 50 miles up to Van Nuys, me and this Mexican kid from San Pedro. And so we didn't have to go to the meeting. And I think they didn't want us up there anyway because I'm Black and he's Mexican. They were all white, and it was up there on Victory Boulevard at a TV station. So they probably didn't really want us up there. But anyway, and then 2 years later, they activated a unit out in at the Long Beach Airport. And the night we had a meeting, the weekend meetings, you know, you have every other weekend, you have meetings when you're on active reserve. So these police officers drove up out there. We were kind of looking at TV and listening about the riot, you know, in this big day room, like, and our first sergeant, they say, hey, there's some police officers out there from Long Beach Police Department. So he goes out there. They come in the unit, you know, to talk to them. And what they were trying to do was get some ammunition for a machine gun. And he said, what? And they said, yeah, we want to get some, we got a machine gun, want to get some ammunition. He said, I'm not giving you no ammunition. Say, those are people out there rioting. They talking about, well, we got these rioters. He said, but those are human beings out there. They're not wild animals. And I'm not giving you no machine gun to go out there and kill people, no ammunition. So you can forget it. And so I had a lot of respect for him then. And then a couple of times we, at that time, I was living kind of in northern Long Beach on 31st Street and Long Beach Boulevard. And my parents lived on down on 15th and Martin Luther King Avenue. And we went over to visit them, and they had the whole area blocked off, like coming into Long Beach because of Hill Street and California Avenue. They had a police blockade, and then also on Orange, and then Long Beach Boulevard, everywhere leading into downtown Long Beach. And they stopped us, me and my wife, and they stopped us, and we had to show IDs and all this, you know, in order to go home. And they wanted to know, well, where you been? I said, to visit my parents, because they live over in the area where it was kind of happening. And, you know, they had little outbreaks in Long Beach, but it was mainly, my dad said, well, what they did, it was the police, because they come around and shot out the street lights. And then they claimed, well, you know, some snipers in there, which they were lying, but that gave them the excuse to shoot all the street lights out. And then it was pitch dark over there. You go over there and you couldn't see nothing, you know. So those are kind of the things I remember about it. And then the rest, just watching it on television.
Okay, good, good.
I remember Denny, that truck driver, you know, when 8-Ball, the guy, and they beat him and stomping on him. You know, they showed that all over the TV. Reginald Denny, I think, was that truck driver.
Well, that's LA 92. That was LA 92.
Yeah.
Sure. We're talking about Watch 65.
Oh.
Okay. Ahi? Ahi?
Yes, sir. Professor Rod. That's about the only thing I just read some things now. I was only 6 years old.
Oh,
from,
yeah.
From,
but
from
you,
what I understand,
you did have a big one in Detroit, too.
Oh, yeah. But that was okay. That was in 67.
Yeah, right after. Yeah, okay.
Right, exactly.
But you were 6 years old when it happened, huh?
I was 6 years old.
Have you heard
old.
Anything else about it? Did you get
Well, it started with a traffic stop, and of course, the dynamics were the same there as they are here in any urban settings where the police force are white and the people in the areas are non-white people, that type of tension. And then the economic situation has something to do with it, the job access for unskilled people and for some skilled folk. So that exacerbated it. So, but I think I'd be wise to listen to you and Brother Ernest this evening, because you were actually there and looking at it and probably in it. So,
all right. Brother Mashinda, did you have any relatives or I don't know, you know, what did you think, what did you know about the Watts Rebellion?
Well, you know, I was around. I was little, so I was. I don't remember it personally, but I'm gonna tell you, I remember the energy, you know. And I tell my wife certain things, like when John F. Kennedy got killed. I was, you know,
that was
63.
That's right.
Yeah, and what I was saying is, I'm using it as an example. I was telling her, I remember I was sitting down, and I was a baby. You know, I wasn't even walking, I don't think. But the point is, I'm looking, I remember that. You know, Shaw, you couldn't remember that, but it's something in my subconscious, and maybe it's something that they play every year, you know, his death and this and that. But the point I'm making is, I remember that funeral. But moving to the rebellion, though, my dad, you know, who was, you know, he was in play, you know, in a lot of different things, and activists and all. And so I recall him telling me when I was young, too. I don't think it was like, you know, that night it happened. But I remember it was a lot going on at that time, and it was a lot of sirens and things, you know, well, like news and things like that. You know, I can just in my subconscious remember certain things. But he went, he was somewhere, you know, in L.A. was like on lockdown, I guess. It wasn't just Watts. It was a lot of arteries that, you know, it was curfews going on and things like that. And so I remember him traveling somewhere. And I think curfew was, you know, martial law had set in. You know, they had curfew. And he and a partner of his, they were driving somewhere. I don't know where it was. But they pulled him over. They drew down guns on him. The guard, the you know, I think they had hundreds of National Guards on the street, and they pulled over and they drew down guns on him. And so they were concerned about it's something in the back seat that was on the floor. It was something, it was a bag, and the bag was saturated, looking kind of greasy. So they're thinking Molotov cocktail. They're thinking some kind of explosive. They're looking at this paper bag. Professor Rye, you remember E. Mills and Watts?
Emil?
Yeah, Emil's, the burrito shop.
Yeah, I think that it was off
near over there across the street from Jordan Downs.
Yeah, oh, across the street?
Yeah, right across the street from Jordan Downs.
Yeah, yeah.
They had a little burrito shop right there called Emil's.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, you know, it's a famous spot. You know, that was one of the best, you know, if you eat burritos or whatever, you know, they had it going on. That's where a lot of folks went, you know. So my point is, so they were concentrating on this bag in the back of my daddy's car, you know, this greasy bag. They thought he had some kind of explosive, and it was one of those, he had ate a burrito from Emil's and threw the bag in the back of the seat. I said, and the guard was tripping. They thought he had some kind of explosive, and it was just, they pulled it up, and it was just a bag with a wrapping in there from one of them greasy burritos that they sell at Emil's, you know, mm-hmm. full of lard and whatever they got in them burritos. But I remember that, but he was out there after curfew. But anyway, moving forward, that was just my own personal, mm-hmm. you know, of course I studied it over the years after I got older, you know, I kind of understood, you know, what went on. But I just want to say this, that it kind of highlighted, you know, it was part of the civil rights movement, you know, it was part of the, you know, the environment, the atmosphere, what was going on in L.A. and Watts and just with Black people in general in L.A. County in terms of the police abuse and things like that. And, you know, which goes on still today, you know, in my upbringing and fully grown and things like that. So it's, you know, it kind of depicted what was happening on the West Coast in terms of, you know, like political disenfranchisement, you know, redlining and, you know, segregation, you know, because you hear about that in the South, you know, and where I'm at here, you hear about that all day long. But, you know, California had it going on. And so that kind of really, you know, exposed that sickness that goes on in places that we thought that might have been limited to the South, you know, which, you know, so. Anyway, that's just my input, you know, as far as anything that I remember personally, you know, no, I remember more of the what is the 91, 90, the one that happened in 90, was it 92 with the Rodney
yeah,
King?
Yeah, LA 92.
I remember that one because I was driving around.
Rodney King.
Yeah, I was out there then. I wasn't looting or anything, but I was in the streets then and I was checking it out and, you know, just, you know, observing what was going on and you know, talking to folks and doing my thing. But that's it. I just wanted to share that little personal tip that my dad shared with me. I remember the National Guards drawing down on him, telling him he better go home right now and that type of thing. You know, remind me during Katrina when we had a curfew here and the National Guards drew down on me and my wife and another relative in the car because we were out after curfew. And we were telling them, you know, we was going to help a sick elderly person and they let us on through, you know, that kind of thing. They'll draw down on you in a minute. But anyway, it just depicts, you know, the ills all over the country, you know, like brother, you know, like you say, in 67 Detroit, and across America and all the different hot spots that were going on, you know. So I'm
all
all ears. I appreciate everybody.
All right, good. Brother Rasha T, what do you remember?
That's the year, that's my birth year. So I probably was watching TV and didn't know what I was watching. That was my birth year.
All right. But did anybody teach about it when you was going through school or any lessons?
Yeah, they it was mentioned. You know, I listened to you, a lot of your commentary when we was in the Black Studies department.
But that's in college, yeah. Okay.
They didn't talk about it, I don't think, too much in, you know, during my formative years. You know, kindergarten through 12th, I didn't hear too much about it, but I knew, you know, I heard about it and all of that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let me just give y'all first a brief history. It really was Los Angeles a rebellion. They wanted to call it a riot to make it seem like we just went out there mad and just start burning and throwing things and stealing and stuff. That's why they call it a riot. But it really was a rebellion. Now, but before I even go into that, let me tell you about the Watts community. I grew up there. I lived on 101st and Central, 109th and Watts Avenue, 111th and Watts Avenue. I went to Ritter Elementary and I went to Markham. We walked the streets in Watts. There was a park. It's now called Ted Watkins Park, but when I was coming up, it was Real Rogers Park, right there across from Central. There were a lot of Black flourishing businesses throughout that area of Los Angeles. As a matter of fact, they used to call it Central, South Central. People moved from downtown and East L.A. down to Central with the Dunbar Hotel and many chambers, shoe shine shop, and young kids used to sell newspapers, the Herald Examiner or the Times, 10 cent at that time, 15 cent. You kept a nickel, the people kept a dime, and the Jet. It was a flourishing Black area. That's why they called it South Central, but it was just Central Los Angeles, but they wanted to separate it from L.A. That's why people say I'm from Los Angeles, South Central L.A. or South, but it's all L.A. And the Watts community became noted, and they wanted to name the rebellion or the riot, the Watts riot, because of some factors. But before that, they had some beautiful homes. They had three major projects, and I'll get into that. In that area, in that concentrated area, they had the Jordan Downs on 103rd. They had the Imperial Courts right there off of Watts Avenue on Mona Boulevard and on the Santa Ana tracks all the way up to Imperial Highway. And then they had the Nickerson Gardens up there by Central and Imperial Highway. There's also Compton Avenue at that time. And so, but most Black people lived in both of those, all three of those projects. And that's a very important point. Latinos were there too. And they operated a lot of businesses in certain Latino areas. We were fixing up cars. It was just a nice place. You know, most people played ball, did that, plenty of churches. But there were some sections in that part of L.A. that had beautiful homes. And hardworking class Black people lived there. But they stayed in what they call a South Central area. They wasn't in where you say Crenshaw is now. And many wasn't even in Long Beach at that time. Gardena hadn't even started, or Carson. Those were not cities at that time. And then, right there, Willowbrook area. But there were some nice homes and nice people. The police was very brutal. Matter of fact, they were so bodacious, they used to drive around in one car, police and sheriff. almost all police agencies went through them areas, giving people tickets for being their car being dropped too low, or their pipes too loud, or any reason to pull people over. There's a lot of oppression that was going through with the police. And as Mashinda pointed out, they had some major assassinations leading up to the rebellion. Malcolm X in 64, 65, well as the Kennedys, and well as we was watching Martin Luther King them get beat as nonviolent people, you know, up to 1965. And there was two movements. It was a civil rights movement. It was mainly Christian and religious group that taught nonviolent under the leadership of Dr. Martin Luther King and other ministers that chose to follow him. Many didn't. And then there was not only that, but then there was a Black Liberation Movement that started in 1967, but it was inspired by the 65 rebellion. But the people were frustrated, and they like to say that the reason that we took to the streets was not just because of, they want to say it was because they tried to give the Fry brothers, the Fry family, a ticket, and it was the highway patrol that pulled him over and was going to arrest him for being drunk, and his mother tried to pull him out the car, and they got in a scuffle, and that's what sparked it. But it was a deep frustration and years of economic exploitation of the Black community. Most people walked where they had to go, and we were going to rummage sales to get secondhand clothes, and I mean, we were poor, but we didn't feel poor because a lot of the people from the South said, you don't know what poor is unless you lived in the South. And there were a lot of them were from the South. We had a number of gangs, the farmers, the Huns, the Baby Romans, the Orientals. I mean, you name it, they were there. But most people were known by their families, like the Montgomerys, the Densons, the Nelsons, the Woods. You know, because you had big families then, and the families stuck together, and they fought together, and they protected each other. And some of them were very violent. Some of them were very vicious in street crimes, and some family members were just, you know, church-going, regular. Parents kept them in the house and things that they've even in the projects. A lot of kids didn't come out, but some of us did. And I remember downtown, what they call Watts. They had a theater called the Largo. They had a bike shop called the Bike Shop, where everybody took their bikes to get fed. In those days, we had teaks. Everybody fixed up their bikes like you fix up cars. And, you know, had goosenecks and all of that stuff. And one of the reasons they wanted to call it a riot is to take away from all that political experience. We didn't rebel because of the history of police abuse and economic abuse and educational abuse and all the abuses that we were suffering from in those concentrated areas, from the lack of facilities and services and things of this nature. And a lot of exploitations, there were markets and businesses there that just took but never really invested back into the community. A lot of good athletes came out. But most of it right there, it was a nice area. But the oppression was the police, both at that time of the Black officer. See, Watts is a district. It's not a city. In fact, it never had a Black representative for that area. It's all right now. The Congresswoman is in Wilmington, and the assembly people is in somewhere like in West Los Angeles. As far as representing that area, until recently, and until they begin to have what they call redistricting. But at the same time, Gus Hoskins was one of our congressional people in parts of Los Angeles. But anyway, it was a high, most men gambled or either worked on cars or were handymen and things of this nature to feed their families. Some were lucky enough to work at the shipyard and do those things. But at the same time, what happened was They really wanted the public to think that the rebellion was just unwatched. But Watts was just known for 103rd because they had streetcars and the red car. I don't know if Ernest remember the red car used
I
to
used to ride
ride
that
through
every weekend to visit my cousin.
Yeah, the red car, streetcar, and the streetcar was fast. It rolled through the down in the community, whereas the red car would just take you from Long Beach to wherever you had to go fast. You know, it run through. And the stop was in downtown, what they call downtown Watts, where they had plenty of businesses, black businesses, white businesses, pawn shops, and everything in that little area. And that's why, and it was the first to be burned, and people took things out the stores and things that they called looting when they were just expropriating from all the history of exploitation. I was 17 at that time, so I jumped right out in there, you know. I was on the streets, and they like to blame this radio commentator named Montague, Magnificent Montague. But for 2 years, he was playing music, and the music get good, and his slogan was "Burn, baby, burn." But he was talking about the music being hot. At that time, we had a lot of fast music, and it was real good. And he had come on KJLH, and he'd say, "Burn, baby, burn." Well, when the Watts Rebellion started, some people were hollering, "Burn, baby, burn."
Yeah.
So they blamed him, saying that he incited it. They fired him from the station. He left, and he went down to Palm Springs. But they blamed him, saying that's why all the burning started, because he was saying, "Burn, baby, burn." He thought they were telling the people to set fires, but he wasn't. That was just his music, way he DJed. And so they wanted to say that was the reason we was out there, because of him. Then they said again that the other reason we was out there was not because of the police abuse, not because of all the discrimination, the assassinations and the beating of our people on national TV with water hoses and dogs and stuff that frustrated us. They didn't want that. So they said it was too hot. And remember, we used to go around Ernest, and they say, "You better leave us alone. It's going to be a long, hot summer." And then that was a battle cry to get the white folks back up off of us or to give us goods and services. And so 33 people got shot. One of the first people shot, Ernest, was in Long Beach. He was a sheriff officer.
Yeah.
Understand? He got shot, and that made the police real mad then.
Yeah.
But they couldn't contain us. So they said Watts was from Alameda, because they blocked off Alameda, because Alameda was where Linwood, Southgate, and Florence areas were predominantly white, and even West Compton was predominantly white, East Compton, Boulevard. All the police lined up on the passageways into those areas and wouldn't let people through. They set up roadblocks, so they kept it from Alameda, and then they said all the way to Crenshaw. And then they said Watts was from Rosecrans to Washington. And that was the Watts area. Well, that's Los Angeles. I'm damn near all Los Angeles. But anyway, they didn't want to say it was the Los Angeles rebellion, even though a lot of the expropriations and the struggles expanded beyond 103rd. The reason it started 103rd, you had those three major projects, and we could walk that downtown LA, downtown Watts. And the train stopped. That's how it got its name, down to get to downtown Watts. It said Watts stop here for downtown. And that's why it was just 103rd at that time. But anyway, the struggle continued. And then they said, "Why are we doing this? We're burning down our own stores and things of that nature." But most of the stores were owned by Jews. and Latinos and Asians and black people. I mean, most of the ones that were abusing us were owned by them in the liquor stores. We had liquor stores, we had black hamburger stands up and down Central ran by black people. And it was just a very beautiful thing. But at the same time, the rebellion was based on politics. That's why we're rebelling against the history of exploitation and abuse. Now, some of us just out there and were a criminal element. I can, because I was out there and I know. But the battle cry was not just burn, baby, burn. It was get whitey. That was the major, major slogan, get whitey. And even light blacks, real light blacks, Creoles, couldn't go down the street. You understand? They all had to. The Nation of Islam pulled all the Muslims off the street, and they pulled all the black officers off the street. And they had to hire black reporters to go into the area to report it. They had no black reporters. And so that's when they started hiring black reporters. And so they would come in and do the stories. And they wanted to say, well, about the 13th to 14th, when they started to stop, that it was because the National Guard came. They came with their bayonets on their guns. And like I said, they shot 33 people. And the 30 of them was all black people.
Yeah.
And they were shot in the back, and they did no autopsies on them. They just, you know, they were just shot. I mean, the majority of them were shot in the back, at least 15 or 16 of them. But anyway, we're young brothers. We were in gangs right after the rebellion. We began to get political. And so the Orientals, the Royal Gents, the Baby Roman Huns and Formans became the sons of Watts. And then you had the daughter of Watts, the mothers of Watts, WLCAC. They started throwing money in and anti-poverty programs throughout the South, Central and Los Angeles area. You had the CAP agency in Long Beach. If Long Beach wasn't going up, why did they give them a CAP agency? Why did they give them 555 Pacific Coast? You understand? And then at the same time, Long Beach Improvement League. All of that was to fund jobs and programs. They had child care, and they had a bunch of things in Long Beach. But that's how Head Start got started. Yeah. As a result of the Watts Rebellion, as well as teen posts. They had teen posts all over the area. Ernest, remember the teen posts, you know, where teenagers could go after school. And they hired a lot of mothers and fathers to run the teen posts in the local areas. And and they were making money, as well as the anti-poverty program. And every time they get ready to fund it, they say, you better fund them. You better fund them another year. It's going to be a long, hot summer if you don't give us no money.
Yeah.
And that's we had. I was part of a group called Young Men for Total Democracy under Bob Simmons and Bishop Brookins. And we had Max Factor's brother, John Factor, bought us a camp in Banning, California. It was called Camp Brookins Factor, and Brother Bob Simmons ran it. Matter of fact, in 1970, I took a whole bunch of students up there under the Black Athletic Association, along with Martin, me and Martin, your nephew, to Camp Brookins Factor with Bob up there, and we stayed the weekend from Cal State Long Beach. But getting back to the Watt, people say, oh, you burned down your own city. They try to make us feel bad. We didn't burn down the city. We burned down some of the places. But you got to remember, George Putnam, in those days, we only had about seven stations on TV. And George Putnam was one of the main men, white, right, racist wing on Channel 5. And he told the people, there's no looters. Insurance companies were not going to pay you if your store got looted. So some white merchants start paying us to burn their places so that they can get the fire insurance. They caught them in Long Beach. They caught him in Long Beach. They caught one white dude who paid people to burn this place in Long Beach. But anyway, so there's a lot of scandalous stuff going on, I admit, of downtown LA, of the Watts, the expropriation. There were plenty of pawn shops, and we got guns out of there. But people that knew what they were getting and knew how to go in these stores, they went for the gold. They went for the rings, and they went for the watches and the gold chains and the valuable electronics. Then you had White Front on Vermont. You had various stores at that time. We went on Imperial Highway right across from the project with Safeway store. They didn't have all these stores you have today. And then, but out of it, when we was coming up, we used to have to, when we had the emergency to go to the hospital, we had to go down to Big General off of Soto Street and First Street in downtown LA. They didn't have no Harbor General. It wasn't no Kaiser. Wasn't no hospitals in the area, the only hospital was the big county. And even them were exploiting us. Because if you had your baby in the hospital, they charge you. They used to keep the women 3 days after they have babies. And now they send them home right after they had the baby. But in those days, they kept 3 days and run up a bill. And they took a lot of black people's houses to the county, charged them for them hospital bills. And so people started having, people were already having babies. Most babies were born on the couch with a mid-mother in those days. But anyway, that's what we were going through. But to watch. But after that, we got Martin Luther King Hospital. We got Watts Mental Health Center. We got the Mufindi Institute. We got Ujima Village. We got, a lot of projects came in afterward. Manpower Development Program was the federal government had contracts with Douglas and various industries in the area, subcontractors with Aaron. They and they funded WLCAC to hire young people, along with Watts Manufacturing, and they had OIC, Office of Industrial Organization of Industrial something, with Mr. Silverman, and then. You had CORE, all black organizations began to come out of the woodwork and they began to flourish during that period. Many young organizations, NAACP, CORE, Congress of Racial Equality, SNCC, Student for Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, all of these organizations were able to flourish at that time. And there was a strong black movement right after 1965. People wore African clothes. That's why they started naming their kids after African things. Because it was a black cultural movement introduced by the US organization. We had what we call the Black Congress. And that Black Congress was where we tried to unify all the organizations. I was security for the meetings. Me and my boys, along with all the various organizations, but it was hard for them to build the principles in which to operate, because all of them had their own agendas. The Panthers was a defense organization, and they were an integrated organization. People like to call them Black Panthers, but their attorney was Charles Gary, a white man, and if you look up the Chicago Seven, he was Bobby Seale's attorney, as well as they ran Eldridge Cleaver in 1968 for president, what they call Peace and Freedom Party. They're socialists, and Angela Davis. They ran her for president in 1968. You have to remember that Eldridge Cleaver's book, Solo on Ice, was dedicated to his white girlfriend. You understand? And that split a lot of the black organizations away from the leadership of the Panthers, because they were an integrationist group. And they were heavily funded by white, Jane Fonda, Marlon Brando, all of them gave him big money. You understand? But Edgar J. Hoover had a different agenda. He considered Martin Luther King one of the most dangerous men, and the US organization one of the most dangerous organizations. Martin Luther King, because he used Christianity and turned and weaponized it for the liberation struggle of nonviolence, organizing churches and changing the Christian doctrine into a civil and a civil rights movement. That's why he started the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. And the US organization was being met with resistance from black people and white people, because they were saying what black people needed was a cultural change, meaning a change in values and views. You can give them jobs, but if they didn't keep the job because they didn't want to work, if they continued to be drugged. See, most black people, when they wanted freedom and liberation, it was not to change and be African or Afrocentric. It was just to be free to do whatever they wanted to do. You understand? They didn't want to be a part of a disciplined, a united political or cultural movement. But see, your culture is the ritualization of your existence, your identity. And that's what Dr. Karanga them introduced. We didn't understand at that time. I wasn't a part of the US organization at that time, because I was a street brother, you know, we wanted to hustle. And we didn't want no political organizations in the community. We even kept the Panthers out for years because we wanted to hustle, you understand? And those groups were bringing the feds in, and wherever they were, the feds were. And we couldn't get our hustle on. And so then they had the, what they call the Watts Summer Festival. The first one was beautiful. The Sons of Watts, it was a culmination of various gangs. And matter of fact, that's what really inspired the Panthers. Panthers were former gang members. The El Rookins out of Chicago with Blackstone Rangers and the Vice Lords, they came together. And we were really, really on a move. It was a movement. People were in natural. All the music was about black consciousness from major groups. I remember the Temptations came out, Message to the Black Man. Curtis Mayfield was full of black music. We're a winner, keep on pushing. You understand? All of that. Ritualizing the black woman and black people. You know, people get ready, train are coming. And even some ministers, Reverend Klieg and Black Liberation Theology. So it was a black movement going on. Bishop Brookins, Black Liberation Theology. That's where Fame got its start. And it was African Episcopal Methodist Church. And you got to remember the first churches with Stevens and I forget the other brother, was African Episcopal Methodist churches. Because the reason they started was because they tried to get communion in a white church in the 1700s. And they wouldn't let them. And that's why they kicked them out, drug them out the church. Because they wouldn't let them. And that's why they started their own churches. But we're getting all the way back. So the Watts Rebellion, although they said we burned out, shopping centers flourished, began to pop up. Willie Nauls, who played pro basketball with the Boston Celtics, opened up one of the first black franchises in Compton called Kentucky Fried Chicken, right there where Tam Burgers is right now. Willie Nauls. I went down there and met with him, and his brother took it over. Then he started a shopping center right there off of 102nd and Avalon in that area. It was just a beautiful thing that came afterward. Jobs and everything was flourishing. Manpower Development, Community Action Agency, Compton Willowbrook Community Action Agency, Westminster Community Action Agency. All of them received funds and were hiring people. And so the struggle was worth it. But don't let them think that without struggle there was not progress. And don't let them have you thinking that we burned down our own community and that we were just out there rioting. and LA 92, the difference was in Watts, 65. It was the majority of people out there on the streets were black people. That's what was it. Black men mostly. That's who were arrested. When I got arrested, I was on Wilmington and El Segundo. And I was going, I just got my a check from working. And my partner and three of my partners, we were going to buy a car. And the National Guard and all of them pulled us over. And we had given one of our partners some clothing and stuff that we had took from downtown Watts. He didn't even go with us. And we just gave him some stuff. And he couldn't take it in the house because his mama wouldn't let him. So he kept it in the car. And when they pulled us over, they opened the door, opened his trunk, and they saw shoes and so they busted us. But men, adults, could bail out. I was a juvenile. I couldn't. So I ended up doing 45 days until they got a chance. I was a junior in high school until I went to court, and they gave me a year probation and things of that nature. That Mr. Newman came down and testified along with Reverend Moses about my character. And so anyway, that's pretty much Watts Rebellion. But as he said, the Watts Rebellion inspired rebellions in Detroit, New Jersey, and political conscious movements. You got your first elected black mayor in Compton, Dollar High. You got your first black mayor in Gary, Indiana, and in Cleveland. I mean, there was a political movement. Up to 1970, out of the close to 80,000 elected officials in the United States, there was only 700 black people. By the time 1980, there was close to 3,000. So there was a political movement in local areas. They got school boards and city councils mainly. But the biggest elected of black people, many black judges got elected because they didn't have to campaign. You just put a name down and you never saw who you was voting for. But anyway, so that was mainly it. The better health care, better schools, that's better social services. Our people used to have to line up to get their food stamps. They used to have what they call blue chip stamps and the green stamps. You get discounts and things of that nature from that standpoint. Things of that nature. And I mean, we used to have to go to rummage sales. I don't know if Ernest remember the rummage sales in Los Angeles. There were secondhand stores that you line up early in the morning, and you go get secondhand clothes. That's what our parents used to do. And then we had to drive in the Compton drive-in. Many babies were born back there. You understand? And it was just a whole new different atmosphere. They had a drive-in right off of Santa Fe and what now the 405 freeway right there on the corner where they built the school district thing. And, you know, drive-ins were real cheap. You can get a whole family car and pay for just the car. And you go in $350 or something and see movies. But nowadays, and even in Watts, downtown Compton at that time, they had a theater. They had four or five banks and shopping centers throughout that area, downtown Compton. You know, but you only could stay on the east side, west side for mainly because on the other side was the Spook Hunters and Linwood Sheriff, Linwood Police, and the white sheriff would harass you if you crossed the track. But anyway, that was pretty much it. Any response? Comment? Ernest.
That was pretty thorough. That was pretty thorough.
Yeah, man. There were pockets. We had Palm Lane. That's where Martin Luther King Hospital is now. That was a many like projects, like naval homes or military people used or something. But then you had a Hawaiian, a little area called Hawaiian Gardens. It was predominantly black in those areas at that time. Now you almost have to go to a museum to find a black community, predominantly black. Even where Ernest them stayed, Long Beach, right there in that little area between Los Altos, really probably Gundry, and all the way up to maybe Pacific and down to Atlantic and back towards 7th Street was predominantly black. You understand?
Now it's like 70,000 Cambodians in there. They outnumber the blacks. Yeah.
And people talk about repatriation. A lot of black people left the community.
Yeah.
Got left. You understand? I mean, for whatever reason. You understand? And they got opportunities and they moved out. And the Mexicans didn't take over the project. Many black people moved out of the project. And the Mexicans moved in. They got better deals than what we have, and they still do. You understand? But go ahead, Ernest, you have another comment?
Oh, no, that was it. What was the name of that? Because I used to catch the red car to go up to my brother's.
That's what we called it, the red car.
You know, and it would go down Alameda, and I'd get off on 57th Street because he lived on 55th and Compton.
Yeah.
And there was some projects like that, but I never knew the name of those.
We called it Red Car because it wouldn't stop for you.
Yeah, the old Red Car.
They told you don't go across
the track. Remember they had that SLA shootout up there. It was right on the next block from where my cousin lived.
Yeah. Symbionese Army.
Yeah.
Was in Q. But that was way after. That was in the 70s.
Yeah.
But what about you, Ahi? Any comment? What about you?
No, just that the struggle was on and all the conscious brothers and sisters were really active during that time. I know, from reading some of the material and it helped ignite a fire up under the movement. So, all of that was, that was one of the derivatives of that uprising was that it did give the movement a boost.
And Brother Kwame Ture and I forget the other brother's name. He came, I know him real well. They're the one that popularized the term Black Power. They was in a demonstration when the brother that tried to integrate Alabama University, the farmer, I forget his name, he got shot in the leg or arm or something. Well, he was a one-man march to integrate. And he got shot. And then what happened was Martin Luther King them said, we're going to go and finish his march because he couldn't finish his march. And Kwame Ture and I forget the name. I'll get the name.
Nick? No. Students Nonviolence Coalition?
No, and that wasn't SNCC. That was John Lewis them at that time. What happened was they were marching, and Martin Luther King was marching civil rights, and then that's when Stokely them yelled out "Ungawa Black Power," and that became the term Black Power. That's what we need, Black Power, and that's when the term got popularized. And it was called the March Against Fear. March Against Fear.
Was that Willie Ricks?
Willie Ricks, that's him. That's him. But he had another African name. He came out here and hung out with us, hang out with me and my Alana, and he came to my house along with Queen Mother Moore and all of them in those days.
Makasa Dada.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, but it was a beautiful struggle. But see, people act like Long Beach was not a strong. Long Beach was very strong in
Yeah, a
about
lot
the
of
West Side.
my friends got with was with the Black Panthers. One friend I grew up with, Earl Satcher, was in there, and a couple other guys, you know.
Yeah, we didn't know. Alfred Jones became captain in the Long Beach area. They called him Squeaky, and he was one of the captains, along with God, I can't even think of his name right now. But he's well known in Long Beach. He worked with Squeaky them, and anyway, I'll get their name. I can't remember all of them, but boy, I was out there with them. You know, I was out there with them right there before it was King Park. They used to hang over there, and the Gundry, Gundry Park, right there off of Alameda. I mean, Anaheim.
Oh, MacArthur Park over there. Cambodians and took that over. Now, I'm
But
looking
they
for
was
them
there.
to probably change the name of that park any day, you know.
But they gave the Cambodians a lot of money
Yeah,
and a lot of support. They had a center, they had a strong political base. They're the ones that helped DeAndre's get elected. And so, he worked close with the Cambodian community. But anyway, eventually they started hiring, re-electing their own people and things of this nature. But anyway, it was the struggle. I'm going to just say this to you. Frederick Douglass said, without struggle, there's no progress. You understand? That power will not yield to nothing without demand. And that's what that became very true in the movement. You have fractionalized groups now. There's so many issues. In 65, there was just two issues, civil rights and black empowerment. That was the only two issues. Right now, you got AIDS, you got all kind of programs, veteran, black veterans, you got so many different groups, and they're all, focusing on their own interests. And so it's not as unified behind just one theme or just two themes. You got a bunch of themes. We're trying to get DC, Washington, DC, a statehood at that time. We were trying to develop coalitions with the with Cesar Chavez, and we tried to get East LA to become a city. There was a thrive and a movement going on at that time. It's a different thing to be out there in the streets and see it than to read about it, because you get to see the you remember the nuances and the things that was going on. But anyway, it was go ahead, Ahi.
No,
If you have.
I was just saying, when so many distractions, but it seems like our people are the first ones to run to that distraction instead of staying home and key and staying focused on the on this struggle. You know, they're not going to come up to them and say, "Well, are you a gay or lesbian type? If you black, you're going to get the same thing all the rest of the black people. They're not going to ask you if you're conservative. They're not going to ask you what all the rest of these so-called civil rights groups out here. They're not going to ask you, are you a part of those? They're going to see a black person and you're going to get what all the rest of the black people get. You should stay on home. This is the struggle that's going to liberate you in all of those instances."
But you had strong, like Reverend Cheney in Long Beach, and the Black Minister Alliance. They just started in the 70s, so pretty much. But you had some strong ministers, but they were mostly localized. Now you got mega churches. You understand the church, the gospel of prosperity versus change. Very few of them participate in politics. Not none of them are speaking against, hardly speaking or mobilizing against the genocide that's going on in Gaza, or the challenges we face as a people. I mean, you had
Let
some,
alone Sudan.
you had the brother that had church in Manchester. You had to show your tax returns in order to be, you know, to be a part of the church, to pay your tithes. It's a whole new different bishop, even Bishop Blake, he's a straight out Republican right wing. You understand? Out there in LA, you know, whereas we had activist church members with Martin Luther King, you very seldom have a. Now, you have Reverend Wright out in Chicago, but even Obama had to put him down for the run for president. Yeah. I mean, he named Obama them kids. He married them. I mean, and then when they put pressure on Obama, he left the church.
Say goodbye.
You know, so it's a different game out there. They spend billions of dollars to keep us divided. Everybody say, why black people can't come together? Well, they spend money. They pay people not to come together. You understand? They intimidate. They give them jobs. 90% of us work for white folks. You understand? And we don't want to endanger our families and take away our livelihood. So we don't even talk politics at the job. You understand? So it's a different game out there. I mean, you got to know how to struggle, win the struggle. You're in covert. You have to go covert to a certain degree. Yeah. I tell my kids all the time, don't talk politics at your job. Yeah. If you're in predominantly white, especially police jobs and public government job, that's the last thing you want to do. And don't drive a car more expensive than your supervisor. You understand? I mean, you'd be surprised at how quick you'd be fired. They used to call us last hired and first fired. And then at the same time, they used to remember the word NIC, Negro in charge. You understand? All companies would hire a black person as a window dresser. That's how the white nonprofits would put two black people in their organization in order to qualify for minority grants. And that's how the nonprofits, white nonprofits, got rich. You understand? So it's a struggle. But anyway, anybody have any other comments? Brother Rasha Key?
No comments, just listen.
What about tomorrow?
Tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
Let me show you. We got your favorite coming on, Professor Ra.
Who?
Brother Chiwari.
Okay, Brother Chiwari.
The subtle divide between perception, perspective, as known as reality and what is real.
Mm.
So that's going to be interesting. The subtle divide between perception, perspective, aka reality, and what is real.
Yeah, it is something. All right. I have scheduled Brother Keeley, who was the second in charge of LA Black Lives Matter. But he's in Ghana and he's trying to get back. If he get back, he'll be on Tuesday. If not, I'll give you somebody else. All right.
Okay.
All right.
Great.
All right. But first of all, I want to say how much I appreciate you, Brother Ernest, as well as Brother Mashinda and Ahi, for keeping our program, keeping us a quorum to keep going and keep pushing to discuss these issues and get y'all perspective. You know, the struggle is long and protracted. We have a lot of people that are not long-distance runners. They start off in the movement and they're episodic. If something happens, they're ready to yell black. But if ain't nothing happening, some of them get comfortable in their oppression. And most people think, I'm black, I know black. They don't study it. They don't study the European. They're not up on the latest news. You know, here is this man moving military people into black mayors. We're going to discuss that Trump move to militarize and take over the police in major black cities where major mayors are, where all of them are mayors, Baltimore, Chicago, and right now Washington, D.C., wherever there's black mayors, and even Los Angeles, we're carrying bad. That's not no coincidence, brother, sister.
See, it look like they're trying to do a trial run for when the election comes up so he can stay in office permanently.
Yeah.
That's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, preparing the army to defend him. So we'll talk about it. That's why he's putting all his people over him. And many, many, many police officers are just like dogs. Yeah. You train them to attack. They attack whoever you sick them on. You understand? Even another dog. You understand? Mm-hmm. And so you got a lot of soldiers and in South Africa were black for the apartheid system. You know, close to 70% of the police and military apparatus was black because white folks were minority. But they were paying them and feeding them. And so they defended white interests. And the same thing with the police here. When Watts, they took all the police off the street. All the black police came off the street. And it wasn't L.A. police. People talk about the police mistreating. You had the sheriff, the highway patrol, you know, the county marshals. All of them were in Watts and Compton. They drive through today. What is the highway patrol supposed to be on the highway? Why are they driving up and down the streets in black communities, giving tickets, you understand, meeting their quotas? It's a long struggle, brothers and sisters. So anyway, we're going to see y'all tomorrow, hopefully.
All right.
Yeah.
I want to say tutanada. Wish all of you all the blessings that heaven send and all the gifts that the rivers bring forth. And y'all have a good day. Stay healthy. Stay strong. Guess what I ate today, Roger P? Vegetables. All vegetables.
That's beautiful, Rob.
Green beans, a salad, and some broiled potato. I said,
how you feel about it?
I said, it's a Roger P meal.
Well, I eat some of the other stuff too, but it's not any meat. It's only seafood, and I eat little nuts and stuff like that, and a few different things. I eat some sandwiches, tuna fish sandwiches. So I eat some things. It's just I don't eat none of the meat.
You don't abuse it. I eat.
Well, so you know.
See, when you was coming up, you didn't get none of that golden bird.
Oh man, I ate some golden bird one night. I got so greedy with that. It must have turned my stomach so bad. I had about 8 pieces of chicken.
Yeah, well, you man, you
way
were
before
serious
Popeyes
about it.
In Louisiana.
Yeah, my stomach was twisting and turning. I think it was Church's. That's what it was. Church's chicken.
Oh, yeah. Good and greasy.
Oh yeah. My God.
All right. Yeah. Well, y'all take care, brothers and sisters.
All right. Each one, all right.
You too.
Each one teach one a conscious point.
All right.
Take our part.